March Madness for women's college hoops is finally here. The NCAA revealed the 64 teams battling to make it to the Final Four and championship in Dallas. Tonight, I'm breaking down the bracket with a few female hoopers. CSUN Serafina Maulupe, Nashi Catrone, and WNBA star Noel Quinn. So stay tuned as we break down the game plan, predictions, and so much more coming up next on AfterBuzz TV.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
It's only fitting for us to come out with some March Madness.
Hey.
Welcome. Guys, we got to get turned here. We're ladies' night. It's ladies' night.
Hey.
Come on, Nash. I know you can dance. Let's go right here.
What?
Come on, Diana.
I changed my ways for the good.
Well, it's March Madness, everyone. If you're not hyped for March Madness, there is something wrong with you, clearly. I mean, the men's Selection Sunday was yesterday, but tonight we're talking about women's hoops. Tonight, Selection Monday, that's all we're talking about, so stay tuned for this. So guys, welcome. I'm your host, Raina LA. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter, Raina_LA. I have the pleasure of introducing my panelists. Thank you guys so much for coming on with me tonight.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having
us. Nashi, where can we find... Oh, Mount SAC and Pepperdine alum, Nashi Catrone is here with me. Nashi, can you tell everyone where we can find you on social media?
You can find me on Instagram, at GoGoNashi, GoGoNashii.
And then we also have Cal State Northridge, just finished her junior season for Cal State Northridge. We have Serafina Maulupe. Serafina, where we can find you on your social media?
Instagram, Fina, FINAA _3, and then Twitter, Fina _Maulupe3, FINA _Maulupe, MAULUPE 3.
Hey now. And then last but not least, we have our WNBA star.
Not a star. Yeah,
sir. Our coach of the year, by the way, the coach of the year too. Shout out to Bishop Montgomery. Nice, who just won the CIF championship. Congratulations.
Thank
Noe,
you.
Where
Thank
can
you.
We find you on your social media accounts?
Twitter. I'm old Twitter. School. I am so LA 45.
I am
That's
so LA
a really 45. Good Twitter name.
I'm so LA. LA.
That's really
Everything
good.
Everything is LA about me, you know what I mean?
Wow. He's got to come back to Sparks. we'll talk about that later. Remember to follow all things AfterBuzz TV at AfterBuzz TV on Instagram, Twitter, and make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channels. Share tonight's special Selection Sunday. Selection Monday, excuse me, show. And yeah, let's go ahead and get it started. So you guys saw the breakdown for today, and we're going to go region by region.
All right.
So first, let's talk about the Bridgeport region. I mean, the number one seed in this region, of course,
UConn.
Is UConn.
UConn.
Yep. I mean, this is their eighth time going undefeated in the NCAA tournament. And they went 32-0 this season under Coach Gino Auriemma, and they will open up with Albany in their first round. So a few notable teams in the Bridgeport region. We have number 2, Duke, number 3, Maryland, and number 4, the Bruins.
Hey!
UCLA, of course, we have a former Bruin over here. But let's break down with UConn, okay? I mean, come on, they're talented. They've been talented for years. Gino has built a tremendous program. I mean, it's very hard to keep a streak going. But what stands out to me the most about this team is their three young players. We have Katie Lou Samuelson. Shot the lights out the other 10
Man.
For 10.
10 for SoCal 10. SoCal kid, too.
Wow. SoCal kid. Yeah. She went to Modern Day.
Yeah. That's right.
10 for 10. I mean, she broke records there. She's a sophomore. Mm-hmm. Nafisa Collier, she's a sophomore as well. And then Gabby Williams, a junior. So these three, clearly, it's scary that they're young. They're going to return next year, so they can only get better.
Yeah.
Do you guys see UConn losing in this bracket?
No.
Why?
Well, because... Well, starting off with defense, you know, wins games, and they hold their opponent 54 points a game. Mm-hmm. So that's a big thing. And they're just very disciplined. They're very disciplined. Gino has them, you know, very structured and just playing within themselves as a team. And like I said, it starts on the defensive end. Mm-hmm. And that's what sets them apart.
What about you guys? What do you say about UConn?
I mean, what's interesting about UConn is they don't rebuild, they reload. They lost 3 of their top players to the draft last year. And it's like, no one expected them to continue on this win streak, 100 plus wins now. And it's just amazing how Geno, year after year, just gets the best out of all of them. And I think they're on a high right now. They're rolling. Like she said, they play within themselves. They play within the system. And they're very hard to beat from every position. They have weapons.
I think what really sets UConn apart from other teams across the entire nation is that they spend their recruiting time, their preseason time, their during season time preparing to win a national championship, not conference, not game by game. Of course, they say each game matters, but the way they build their program, the way that they run their program, before they even get there, they pick out players that they know can psychologically remain calm, collected, under pressure, and also have a huge gap in skill level. I mean, talent, you know, talent always can get beat with fundamentals and with skill. But UConn sees both of those factors, even from the age of 13, 12, when their recruiting is just immaculate. There's no one in the nation that can beat them in recruiting, that I personally feel. And they spend their entire season preparing for that championship game, the most nerve-wrecking game in the entire season, in the entire country. And every single day they prepare for that. Psychologically, they're tuned in, and I doubt that anybody can even come close to rattling that cage.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. UConn, they, as a player, I mean, all three of you guys played, you want to go after UConn. You want to play UConn. As competitive, I know all three of you guys are super competitive. And one thing about them in this tournament, every single team, they want to beat them so bad, so they're going to bring out their best efforts. But, you know, Geno is just a great coach. His coaching staff is amazing. He knows what he wants in his players, and he obviously has built that in his entire career. If you guys were coaching against UConn, how would you prepare a team to play them? What are some of the factors that you would instill in your players to get them ready for?
I mean, I think that the biggest thing to even try to do against UConn is to not so much go overall as a team, but you got to break down each and every single player. UConn has players that are absolutely just amazingly happy with just being the best rebounder, the best screen setter, the best assist giver in the entire country. So you have to break that person down and some way, somehow, try and find something that's not five-star and ride that into the ground, especially when you have to have your players wrap their entire minds around that person, around that weakness, and you have to just, I mean, pull those strings.
Their role players
individually, instead of as a whole. As a whole, I mean, their unit, you can go all the way to three sections deep in this team, to the third row, and you're still going to have the same outcome unless you start picking them apart one by one.
What do you guys think about UConn?
I'd say, as a coach, I would prepare them mentally more than anything because I want to give my players confidence to know that they can go against the best of the best. You know, so, like, just every day in practice, letting them know that, just giving them that confidence that they need, and just preparing every day, taking one day at a time, and like you said, and just breaking down, like, the personnel one by one. And I just believe it starts with mentally getting them ready.
And you come from a program that enforces the mental game.
Yes.
Coach Jason Flowers, I mean, he's a great coach. He's turned season around. I'm sure you can attest to how important your mental game is, how it applies to your actual game.
Yes, because, I mean, physically your body starts breaking down, and that's when the mental toughness comes in, and just knowing that you can still do it. So definitely that's the most important thing personally.
Coach of the year. How would you coach? I mean, that's, you know, you come in your first night, you're coaching, you win a CIF championship. I mean, you come in and you have
like, who does it?
I can't even, not the same level.
But I'm just saying, like, how would you coach against a team like UConn? Yeah. What was something that you would?
To piggyback on the mental aspect of it, I think you have to understand you can't make mistakes. The game is 40 minutes. It's possession by possession. And just to instill that, it's one game. It takes one game to beat this team, and you have to give it all. You leave everything you have on the court. But again, just possession by possession, you cannot make mistakes. And I think you have to be just as physical with UConn as they are with teams. I think they out hustle teams. Yeah. They out physical teams, if that's a word, and they just outplay teams. Mm-hmm. My team, if I were to play against them, we have to know that we have to compete, and we have to compete at a high level. And like I said, we can't make any mistakes, and that's probably what I would go into doing to prepare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what's tough about UConn? It's like you'll play a zone for teams that can't shoot, right? Mm-hmm. But they can shoot. Right? They gotta get, but then you want to play man to man, but then they got some big girls, so it's like they're killing you either way.
Mm-hmm. Pick your poison.
Pick your poison, you know what I'm saying? So with UConn, I would say maybe their top three, maybe try to get them in foul trouble, you know, make their bench players step up as opposed to their top three players. Mm-hmm. But, you know, UConn, I think those three guards those three players that we highlighted, I feel like they're smart enough to not, and that's what's scary. They're young players, too, so they have the rest of the year, their rest of their years to improve. Mm-hmm. But yeah, UConn, I don't see them losing at all on this
season. Do you think South Carolina can compete with them?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. I think the physicality of, of South Carolina, of how they play, I think that's something that can get UConn startled a bit. Mm-hmm. Skill-wise, I do think UConn is a little bit better all around, but I do think that physical, that hustle play that Dawn Staley has instilled into her players, I think that can bring them, make it close at least with South Carolina. Yeah. What do you guys feel about South Carolina? They're coming up next, actually.
Like you said, like the team with the less mistakes will win the game. Mm. You know, South Carolina, like you said, they're very physical inside, but it's just staying disciplined, not getting in foul trouble. I think South Carolina will be a good matchup for UConn. Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest drawback with South Carolina is that they're not good playing away from home. And now for, what is it, second time now, their region is far away from home. Mm-hmm. And Dawn Staley has only made it to the Final Four out of her four-year window when they played in the Eastern time zone. Mm-hmm. And now they're back out of that. I think that, you know, it's not really a big deal when you look at it from an outside perspective, but if you look into the details, the different time zones, the time you wake up, the time you train, the time you practice, the time you do shoot around, all those little details, they shake and they rattle your cage in regards to your preparation mentally. Mm-hmm. So I think that if South Carolina can get over this regional hump, I think that they're really going to shock a lot of people by going pretty deep in this tournament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you kind of touched on what I was going to talk about next with the Stockton region, because they, out of the entire Stockton region, there is only three teams that are in the West Coast that have, and all the rest of them are on the East Coast. Wow. They have to deal with the time change. Wow. So we're going to talk about that a little later, though. Bringing it back to the Bridgepoint region, your Bruins.
Yes.
Here we go.
Got them in there. The Bruins. I'm so excited for them. Too. They got the four seed. I wanted to ask you, so the you've had your fair share of coming into the tournament. I mean, I'm pretty sure that was super exciting. Mm-hmm. Never experienced that, but I'm sure it was very, very exciting to hear your name call on TV. But, I mean, it's fine. So the Pac-10 then to the Pac-12 now, how has it changed since?
I mean, Stanford, when I played, was always pretty dominant. You knew that they were going to win the Pac-10 at that time. The Pac-12... on any given night, any team can win. I think that the competitiveness day in and day out of that conference has improved. Mm-hmm. Oregon State is a powerhouse right now. I mean, Stanford is going to be Stanford. They won the conference championship. Washington, you got my Bruins. I mean, every team, every night is a difficult matchup. And I think it's a testament to coaching, recruiting, getting in big recruiting classes, and a lot of the West Coast kids are kind of staying West Coast, but we're getting like some big recruits from Texas and other state parts of the state. So shout out to the Pac-12. I think it's a great representation of the West Coast, and I'm super, super, super excited about seeing them do well in the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, the Pac-12, they have seven teams total in the tournament right now. So how do you guys feel about UCLA and this particular bracket right now?
What's that face?
Oh, come on.
I mean, people aren't going to like my answer to this question.
Go ahead, girl.
And from my honest opinion, from my basketball opinion, from my outside perspective, looking at the Big 12, looking at the A-10, the ACC, all these other conferences, I feel that the Pac-12 is not the Pac-10 that they used to be. And I feel like they're Hollywood.
What?
I feel that Hollywood? Stanford is Stanford, but I feel that teams like UCLA, like Washington, Plum's the one, not the two.
Two teams made it to the Final Four last year. Mm-hmm. Two.
But I feel that most of the highlights that UCLA is getting are from the men's side, not because of the women. That's what I feel like. I feel like on a national perspective, once they start playing these East Coast and Midwest teams, I feel like they're going to be dropped pretty quick. And I feel like that's one of the reasons why they're starting to recruit outside of the local zone. Because they know that they need that. I don't think that they're going to go far with what they have.
So you don't think UCLA is going to make it past...
Seeing that Katie Lou is from the West Coast and she's going to UConn, a lot of those West Coast kids are making those East Coast schools good as well.
They are, but they're getting picked up real quick to teams that are training to win a national championship. I feel like Pac-12, a lot of the bragging rights are just because they want to win the Pac-12. I feel like Stanford is really the only one that has the possible opportunity of handing UConn another loss, but I feel like that's because mentally they're used to that. They're used to being there. They're used to taking those steps. It's hard to have, you know, teams that come up off of hype to last on the long show when you have all these other teams. Like, people just started talking about Oregon State. They've been decent all year, though. But it wasn't until UCLA took a loss or until Washington took a loss that people are now jumping ship. The Pac-12 is fickle like that, in my personal opinion. They're going to jump to whatever's hot, whatever they feel like. Okay, this one lost. We're going to touch on this team.
That's why I think it's competitive, because there's no clear-cut one person. Yeah. We could talk about the conference that UConn is in. Mm-hmm. It's terrible.
Yeah.
Hands down. I feel like you don't know in the Pac-12 that makes it so good. Every team is competitive, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, not a lot of conferences have teams that match up with each other every single game, almost every single game that you're going to play. Mm-hmm. It is tough. You play Thursday and Saturday. Your Thursday game and Saturday might be tough, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Usually you have a day off. You're like, okay, I have an easier team. Mm-hmm. But no, for the Pac-12, I have to say that each of them, they match up well with each other.
Pac-12 is exciting, and it will remain exciting. But mm-hmm. I feel like on a competitive scale, Pac-12 is really only competitive with Pac-12. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like, you know, going all the way through, all the way down that river, all the way home, I don't see very many teams doing it and doing it consistently. Anybody can make it there once, but even if you look on the men's side, a lot of these teams that pop out of nowhere don't come back again. Mm. So I would be interested to see a team like UCLA go all the way through. And that's going to be shocking to me. As a West Coast kid, I'd be happy. I'm always going to go for a West Coast team.
Right.
But in the long run, if a team like UCLA or even Washington, Oregon State can trickle their way in and squeeze through those, you know, those mazes, I think that is going to be great. But I still will be shocked for the long haul.
Fina, what are your thoughts on UCLA before we move on?
UCLA, well...
You've played against a few Pac-12 schools. Have you played against
Pac-12? We played against Stanford and Washington.
Yeah.
Dominant, very dominant teams. Mm-hmm. It was so good, so disciplined, especially playing against Kelsey Plum. Just watching her play, I was just, like, amazed. I was like, wow. But, you know, going with UCLA, I mean, their leader is Jordan Canada. She's mm-hmm. a great point guard. And she sets the tone for the team. And having Monique Billings inside, you know, it's tough to guard her. She's super athletic. Playing against Boise State, that'll definitely be a good matchup. But I'd say UCLA will definitely put on a good run. I'm for West Coast teams as well, so UCLA will definitely show out.
Last note before we move on from the Bridgepoint region, Maryland. It was a kind of a snub. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of analysts are saying that they did get they took it done dirty a little bit. They got the number 2 seed. Did you see them in this UConn bracket, or did you see that they feel like they should deserve a number 1 spot somewhere else?
Yeah, I mean, it's evident that the committee decided on different things this year. Mm-hmm. I think they were looking more toward what you did toward the end of your season. They won their conference championship, I believe, right? And they won 30 games, and they won their league. So to me, I feel like they didn't get the respect that they needed, but that's the motivation you need. We'll see. We'll see if they play with the chip on their shoulder, and we'll see how they respond to what they feel like they were snubbed. I don't know. We'll see. I think it's good. It's good motivation for them.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. Yeah. What do you guys think?
I mean, I feel like with players like Walker, mm-hmm. Kimbrough, or Jones, I feel that, I mean, they barely, they won by a 10-point deficit, but in their conference tournament, they barely beat Purdue. And Purdue is one of those teams that kind of came out of nowhere, mm-hmm. right off the top. I mean, Ashley Morsetti, she came in, and she's been, like, off the wall. Despite her frame, despite how she looks, she scores from all ends of the court, and she gave Maryland a run for their money. Mm-hmm. And she's the only senior on their team.
Right.
The only one. And so the entire team is still young. So they really weren't prepared to go as far as they did, even in their conference tournament. Mm-hmm. And to have that one player on a team that isn't really prepared to go to the next level still almost take that away from you, I don't think that they're going to make it far in the tournament, because I don't think that they're mentally prepared to do what it takes to have an entire 40 minutes of definitely not having one player just handed to you.
Right.
They didn't have a challenging schedule. That was another thing. Their schedule wasn't as challenging. Their RPI wasn't high. But, like, in the tournament, one game. That's all you need. Yep. Just one game. So, like, it'll be fun.
That's definitely going to be a fun region to watch. Mm-hmm. So let's move on to the Stockton region. We did talk about Dawn Staley's South Carolina team. Mm-hmm. And they got snubbed for sure, obviously, with going to back in time, like to the West Coast to play. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel Coach Staley's frustration. By the way, she was the USA coach.
Congratulations.
Yes, that is awesome.
Shout out. Yeah.
Well deserved.
Yes. I got a clap on that one. Thank you.
So we all agree South Carolina got snubbed for that.
Yeah.
As a coach, I guess, coach player wise, coach and player, both sides, how would you prepare for going into something, a big tournament like this, and you're like mentally and physically prepare yourself to compete in the Stockton region if you are on the South Carolina's team?
Sheesh. I mean, you gotta, even here, like, you gotta look at the teams that are on here. You know, a lot of these teams, they can give you a run for your money, like Noelle said, on any given day. It's just one night. So with that being said, I feel like not only for herself, but for her team, and not only for the coach, but her team. Sometimes you just got to play for the coach. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just got to play for the program. Sometimes you just got to play so that way people know where you should be that next following year. And South Carolina has all the tools to do that. They're all eyes. I feel like a lot of eyes, most eyes in this entire conference, besides maybe Oregon State or Marquette. All the eyes are going to be on South Carolina because we all know they got gypped.
Yes.
So I feel that they can come out and they can make a statement for not only this tournament, but tournaments to come, especially in the regional and seeding, to pretty much change the whole dynamic of the cards that they've been dealt so far.
Yeah, I personally think the Stockton region is the toughest out of the four. You know, we have Mississippi State, Washington, Louisville, Gonzaga represented by the WCC, I think, and then South Carolina. They're going to have some tough teams to go against. There's not one easy team. You know what I'm saying? So, I don't know. That's going to be pretty tough for them. But moving on, we have Long Beach State representing the Big West. Super proud. Shout out to Long Beach State.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of Long Beach State friends.
That's insane.
Let's go.
That's so awesome. Any team in the Big West, I feel, because it's all local. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's awesome to see a team go and compete in the NCAA tournament. Fina, I know you've played against you had your fair share of Long Beach State. I mean, they're matching up with Oregon State, the number two seed.
Yeah.
What do you think that Long Beach State needs to do to prepare for Oregon State?
Definitely Oregon State. They're big inside. They are, you know, that's the main factor that they're going to need to focus on. Definitely their inside play. I feel Long Beach, you know, they're a hardworking team, and I feel they're going to be mentally prepared for this game, but they just need to focus their personnel on the post players and inside for Oregon State. So, yeah.
Oregon State, Sydney Weiss, shout out.
Shout out to her.
Big guard.
Yeah,
she is
lefty.
Nice.
Something about lefty players, man. Such a smooth game.
I feel like it's lefty season.
Yeah, Kelsey Plum. Yeah.
We're going to talk about her soon, too. But what do you guys think? How do you think Long Beach... I mean, I'm all for it. I hope, you know, it's hard to play against bigger teams that you're not really used to. I mean, it's... I don't know. You just got to hope that they, if you're going to play zone against the big girls, that they don't make these outside shots. Yeah. Pick your poison. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think Long Beach needs to do against OSU, Nashi?
Do we know how many tournament appearances they've had lately?
Who, OSU?
Long Beach State.
This is their first ones in like 27
years. Forever.
Yeah,
27 years, right?
Something like that. Yeah, it's been a while, yeah.
I mean, seeing them even in your guys' conference, they're one of those teams that if they get that spark,
yeah,
they're next level.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really looking at it like this. If Long Beach State comes out like the beach Long Beach State that they can be, I mean, they're going to give Oregon a run for their money. Yes. Because once they click and they have that cohesive chemistry, they're willing to willing to do whatever it takes. I mean, you know, I just look all the way across the board. Like Kelsey Plum, like, you know, I know we're gonna get into her, but like, I feel like they only took their first loss because the rest of the team watched the Kelsey Plum show.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you're still a D1 athlete, too. I think that cohesively, you know, I like to see whole teams go at it. I don't like the individual stardom of it all. I think that that's how you get your tradition going, and I think that's how you have repeats. And I think that we're just not there yet. Growing up, I mean, there was nothing bigger to me than USC.
What?
Just saying, because I come from a USC family, but I was a diehard Pac-12 fan, and I want to be a diehard Pac-12 fan in women's basketball again. And in order for us to do that, we need a few more Final Fours.
Yeah,
that's it.
I agree. I mean, but then again, you know, back when we were playing, it's just a different ballgame. I mean, you see it starting out even in high school.
It is.
It's just the level of competition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You see the level of, I guess, enthusiasm and drive for the game.
Yeah.
It's not the same. I don't know exactly what it is. I can't put my finger on it, but it is different from when I grew up watching the Pac-10 mm-hmm.
yeah.
to now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can't put my finger on it now, but it's just a different style. I don't know what it is. I don't know if you guys...
What do you guys feel it is?
I want to say social media has a lot to do with it. So yeah. When I was a kid, not trying to date myself, but I was playing outside all the time, in the gym all the time, open gyms all the time, and I really wasn't like doing anything else because I knew for a fact I had a passion to play basketball and I loved basketball.
Yeah.
And so now it's like these kids, and then I didn't have a personal trainer. No, I mean, I had a coach and that was it. And so it's just different. These kids are into different things, more so this instead of like shooting a basketball. And I just think the generation is different, and it's technology, I think.
Fina, you're kind of in the younger generation than us. We're kind of old school.
Yeah. Yeah. Back in my day.
Do you have any thoughts about how, I guess, the game is just different now compared to... Question for you. Who did you admire growing up? Who modeled your game after?
From the female side, Chrissy Tolliver. Oh, man, that was my girl. I just
that really says your age, too. Right. That really says your age.
When she was at Maryland, that was, like, my favorite, like, person to watch, and Candace Parker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, like, I feel like we have, this generation has changed a lot because of social media. I mean, you know, they always have to post when they're working out. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, you know, I'm in the gym taking selfies. Hey. So it's just,
it's not on the gram, you didn't do it.
Exactly, you know. So it's just, like, you know, like, social media has changed our generation a lot, and it could be a good thing, it could be a bad thing, you know, so.
To point on that, though, it could be a good thing, because I saw, this is football, a high school football recruit received his scholarship through an Instagram, or, like, something that was on Instagram, like, his highlight. He wasn't really heavily recruited. Arizona. Dang, I wish I had his name, but he received a scholarship actually through some of the social media posts that was like, you know, like those Twitter highlight thing. It was on somebody's. I'm like, oh wow, recruit him, and that's, you know, so it could be a positive and it can be a negative thing at the same time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just not to get off topic, but I do feel like the generation is just different from back to the day now. But yeah, so
I think that in this day and age. Not to hit my age either, but I worship Diana Taurasi.
Oh,
that
man,
woman is just not only on the court, but off the court, meeting her, spending time with her. Mm-hmm. Phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenal. And I think that the way technology has changed in sports, ball is now life.
Yeah.
So it's no longer a hobby for us to potentially, hopefully, struggle to get a scholarship. You can make a lucrative and amazing career out of playing basketball. Mm-hmm. As a woman now, here or worldwide, I think that's great. But with all those different outlets come all the different distractions. Yeah. You have so many girls now who I've personally seen not even make a community college team, but they have 100,000 followers and they're posting dribbling videos. And I'm like, yo, you're trash.
That's true.
You're not one of us.
Yeah,
like, and it's not to like block them out, but all they do is post these videos.
Yeah.
And kids nowadays, if you have all those resources, there's no reason why you should not be talented, why you should lack in any that's department. Mm-hmm. With all the physical training and development, that's you can, you know, hashtag handle life and see all these different videos to get your left hand right, to get sprint workouts. So I feel like today's day and age, it's literally become more of a trend than an actual, you know, like livelihood. Mm.
So before we go on to the last two regions, that kind of sparked a question for me. How do you think AAU ball has changed over the years from now to was before? I know we briefly touched on it last show, but how do you guys feel like AAU ball is now as opposed to it was back when you were playing? And then
I think that it's still very talented, but I think that that's overshadowed by popularity.
There's so many teams.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So many teams, and it's doing the kids a disservice.
Yes.
By not, you know, focusing on the important aspects of basketball. Training the kid in the summer is the most important part of basketball. Training and playing. And a lot of times these club teams are trying to get the best kids, all the best kids on the team, and the kids are losing in the situation because they're not gaining knowledge of the game. They're not getting specific tools that they need. I think it's a great AAU is what helped me, I believe,
to
get better in the summer. I think it's a great tool if it's used properly.
Yeah.
And without exploiting the kids, with now you got Nike, Adidas, what team I want. No, just let the kids, put the kids on the play, on a team, let them play, let them get better.
How about you, Fina? How did AAU ball help you in your college career or get to your college career and where you are now?
I'd say AAU has definitely helped me get to where I am now. Mm-hmm. I'd say it depends what program you're with. It depends a lot.
For sure.
And like if your coach has connections. So it just depends where you're at. Mm. But yeah, I'd say, you know, AAU has its good and its bad because, you know, there's players that like ESPN Hoop Girls, like that website. Mm-hmm. Have you guys heard of it? ESPN Hoop Girls?
I've heard of it, but I haven't gone on it yet.
I mean, it shows, it's like for the guys, like it has like the rankings of girls and like 4 stars, 5 stars. Yeah.
Wow.
So I feel that, I don't know, some girls that are not as talented and don't make that. I don't know. I just feel it just makes them feel some type of way. And
they look at that versus your mental game is pretty strong. I can tell you don't really pay attention to all that.
Yeah. So, but yeah, AAU definitely helped me. So.
Yeah. It's just, there's so many AAU teams now. Like back then when we were playing, it's just, you have your core four. Then now it's like you have four or five. Now you have them all coming and joining and go on the same team and then have your little feeder teams. Mm-hmm. And it's just like so many teams now. It's like, God, where do you go? Mm-hmm. You know what
I feel like everybody kind of wants to have a team now. When we were younger, it was okay to, I mean, I played on West Coast All-Stars back when it was around, and I played some with FBC and some big tournaments. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I was on a team called MVP Elite. Has anybody ever heard of it?
No.
And it was some of the greatest moments of my life. But every single player on that team got a scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because we showed up to play with each other. And like you said, it wasn't to go find the Nike team.
Right.
It wasn't to go find the Adidas team. It wasn't a popularity contest.
No.
Now it's all about how much you market versus even the coaches that can actually have those connections to do something.
Mm-hmm.
I would definitely, especially for future players, look at the programs who came up from nothing, who have substantially, you know, had kids go get scholarship, the Cal Sparks or the West Coast Premiers that are around now. It's because they came from nothing. They're still, you know, but they're still around.
Yeah.
And they're still getting kids in and out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I feel like AAU really, I got my scholarship because of travel ball.
I think a lot of us travel ball
just saved our lives. I mean, but yeah, so halftime is over. Well, let's go back into the tournament.
All right.
Thanks, guys, for still tuning in on us. So the OKC region, Baylor takes the number one seed. And this was, I guess, another shocking pick, I'd say. Mm-hmm. They lost to West Virginia in the Big 12 tournament, yet they still had the number one seed. Why do you think that they still have that seed and they're able to play in the OKC region?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like they were given that right away. Yeah.
Somebody's friends with somebody.
No,
but Baylor had a very tough schedule. Yes. They had some really big wins, especially beating Texas.
That's a huge win.
It was a big win. And then, you know, Kim Mulkey, she's all fired up saying there's no new sheriff in town. You know, they're still making sure that everyone knows Baylor is the team to beat. And I don't know. I just feel like the committee, they saw something. They saw those wins. Early on in the season, they didn't really punish them for losing in that tournament, and I actually think they deserve it. They played well all year. They've done well. We'll see how they do in the tournament, though.
What do you guys feel about Baylor getting that number one seed?
Well, I personally enjoy watching their post player, Kehlani Brown, 6'7", center.
Six.
Wow,
Can't
you know,
be tight.
Yeah, she plays with so much passion.
How do you get that tall?
Yeah.
Sorry.
You know, she's so dominant in the post. Mm-hmm. You know, all they have to do is just lob it. You know, she has good hands. And just also Alexis Jones, the guard, you know, she's, you know, her health is kind of a factor because I believe she, like, bruised her knee or something. So, but, you know, they're coming off of a loss. So, you know, they're just, I think giving them the one seed is just giving them a lot of fuel. And I believe, you know, they'll do well in the tournament.
What about you, Nash?
I mean, I would like to. I think Baylor definitely deserves it. I mean, look at they're 30-3.
Yeah, their record.
Regardless of, you know, their last or the only three losses that they have, would I like to see like even a Drake in there or North Carolina State just to stir the pot a bit? Yes. But then again, I mean, I think that it shows how much Baylor has established themselves, and they continue to do so. So, you know, I'm not too disappointed in this. Cal's in there. So,
shout out to Cal.
Yeah, you know,
yeah,
another Pac-12.
Yeah, bust through that bubble.
I want Cal to you know, bust through that bubble, and they still have a couple of teams that are in there. But I think that, you know, outside of Baylor, Chattanooga, I mean, has won 5 straight conference tournaments.
Right.
I think that they're, you know, people don't realize that a lot of it has to do with coaching sometimes, and their coach has seen 30 NCAA tournaments. Wow. That's right up there with Pat and Van Devere.
Yeah.
Like, so, you know, if it's not Baylor or Cal, I'm definitely going for them to, you know, bring something home with it.
One thing I'm kind of nervous about for Baylor, Kim Mulkey said in her last post-game interview, her bench players, they didn't show up in their game against West Virginia. And you need to have a bench presence in the tournament. Your star players, if they're going to go and compete every single day, they need some breaks. They're not going to be as consistent all the time. You need to have a bench, at least somebody to have a spark. So that's my only, I guess, point against the Baylor Bears. I do feel like they deserve it. Kind of surprising because they did lose to West Virginia, but I don't know. Just their bench players, they need to step up. I mean, she even said it herself.
Yeah.
She said, Kim Mulkey, she said, you need to put your big girl panties on. I mean, she's straight up like that.
I mean, Baylor's always been a team that you got a lot of fire up under for the most part. I mean, there's been very few teams that at Baylor that haven't gone without a loss, even if it's just that one loss when they had Brittany Griner, that one loss fueled them all the way. So I mean, hopefully Baylor's bench sees that, they ride that wave, and they try and see how far they can go with it.
Another key team that we're going to highlight is Washington. I mean, Kelsey Plum,
girl's a hooper.
Kelsey Plum, let me just read, leading scorer in the nation, she's Pac-12 all-time leading scorer, all-time scoring record, and there has been people talking about how she has been the most complete player since Sue Bird. How do you guys like that comparison?
Well, I mean, she I don't know what it's called, but the 50-40-90, mm-hmm. shooting 50% from the field, 40 mm-hmm. from the three, and 90 from the free throw. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's amazing. For her to do that,
it's not much you can say, exactly. right?
The facts show it. The facts show it. So
she gets buckets.
She does.
I think what makes her so hard to defend is she's very shifty. So she could hit the three, then she could take it to the basket. Then Chantel Okafor, big girl, send up screens. Washington is hard to defend. I asked the coach before, like, how do you stop Washington? And she said, I won't say what school. You just got to give Plum 40 and hope everyone else doesn't, score a lot. And, you know, she's going to get her buckets. I think that she's a tough guard. What makes Washington's team good is they're well-coached. They're balanced as well. They do a good job defensively. So, I don't know. That comparison is very, very great, in my opinion. Sue Bird is amazing to me. Sue Bird is like the ultimate facilitator. She can do everything, and for that comparison to be out there, I think that shows a lot about Plum's game and what she brings to the game. So that's cool. I don't know who said that, but
there has been it was actually today I heard that a few analysts have done that. And I mean, through Twitter and Instagram and everything, or her highlights, they've compared her to the female James Harden. Which I could see.
Yeah.
I mean, lefty. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Nashie, about Kelsey? I mean, you kind of shared a little bit, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, what she's like 5'7"?
She's like 5'8".
She's not even at the 5'9" mark. I'll repeat that. She's not even at the 5'9" mark doing this at elite Division I basketball. She's a senior, right?
Yep, senior.
She was 50 points away from breaking another record. I believe that is another scoring record. I'll go back to you on that one, but 50 points away.
She wasn't.
She's definitely going to get that.
She's always been a decent player throughout the years. But what she's done is exactly what she said she was going to do. And to me, that's epic. Epic. If the rest of the Washington team can play with her and not watch her, they're going to mess some stuff up in the bracket and in the tournament.
Mm-hmm. How can you not, not watch her, though?
Like, it's just, I know, but it's just
get a bite.
Go to work. She can go to work.
How do you guard her, though? Like, personally, if I had do you just deny her the ball?
Face guard her their entire game, do a 4-1, and then, team prayer before halftime, in between timeouts, and then keep it pushing.
Do you think people have not tried that yet, though?
She was getting double teamed for a while. She is like a consistent Steph Curry.
Yeah, she moves well without the ball.
She moves really well without the ball. She makes me want to go back to school, go back to college, and be better than I was before. It's just to see her do
so
that.
Funny.
One thing that stands out to me for Kelsey Plum is I always look at players outside the court and just to see how they carry themselves. I mean, obviously, I've never met her before. I don't know her personally, but I'm very observant on how they carry themselves on social media. I've ran across her Instagram and her Twitter, and it's all about her teammates. Her teammates had a great scoring night. She posts a picture with her. It's like she posts a picture with her kid fans. I mean, she just seems like she's just a great all around person.
Cool. Yeah, definitely.
But I'm picking Washington. I hope Washington goes super far in this tournament. I mean, just because of her, I think I'm really a huge fan of her.
Yeah.
So, just a shout out to Kelsey Plum, her work ethic.
Yeah.
That's what really sets her apart.
Incredible.
Her work ethic and, not getting comfortable at where she's at as a player, and just always getting better. That's how she's gotten this far.
Yeah, because she went from her junior season, she was she had a great career as well, but she just became more consistent.
Yeah, consistent.
In her senior, and it's just, gosh,
you know, the game I would like to really see is that Washington versus Mississippi State.
That's Mississippi State. Oof.
Yeah, I would love to see that game.
Yeah. We'll see how Washington does. Shout out to Kelsey. Last but not least, we have the Lexington region. Notre Dame at the number one spot.
Woo. Dun, dun, dun.
Yes.
So, Notre Dame, guard heavy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They've always been pretty consistent with having great guards. How do you think they will do in this region. They have number two Stanford, they have Texas and Kentucky all in the same region. What do you guys feel about
Lindsay Allen? She does a great job of leading that team. Very, very, very good leader. But I'm also a friend of Brianna Turner. Mm-hmm. Amazing talent. Mm-hmm. And inside skill left and right, just big girl rebounding. Muffet McGraw, like, she always has consistent teams. You know, she's consistently playing the UConn's, playing the Tennessee's, playing the tough teams, and she her teams really take on her personality, just tough. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Relentless. I think with Allen at the helm, I think that they'll go far. They have a lot of experience and well coached.
She sees the floor very well too, very Allen. Well. She leads the ACC in assists. Mm-hmm. By the way. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to see Notre Dame. What do you guys think about them?
I mean, I think that they're pretty much just like, you know, I think that Stanford's definitely going to give them a run for the money. That's that. I mean, I feel that in
what a Pac-12.
Wow, here we go. Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I would love to see. I was screaming heavily the last time Stanford won it all. You know, I would love to see that again. Mm-hmm. For sure. And I think that Stanford's going to take over Notre Dame. I think that a lot of people are so Notre Dame heavy right now. But I think from the rest of the bracket going on, I see that we got Kansas State in there. Mm-hmm. Mount Sac Mountie just signed to Kansas State, so hopefully they win one game. Show a little plug in there for her. Good job, KJ. But, you know, overall, I'm seeing Stanford. This whole bracket, Notre Dame is good, but that's going to be the biggest game for Stanford right there, because mm-hmm. I feel that Stanford's loss and the losses that they've had had just been like learning points, just like quick flashes, wake-up call, because they're still developing a lot of things within their system. But I really feel that Stanford is going to overtake Notre Dame a little bit.
What about you, Fina? What do you think about Notre Dame?
Notre Dame, season? Like Noelle said, the point, Lindsay Allen, that's mm-hmm. who it starts with. She knows her teammates. She knows when to give them the ball. Mm-hmm. She, like you said, like she leads the ACC in assists. They're just team, like, collectively, like they play team defense. They're so disciplined. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're just consistent, and it's like I said, it starts with the point guard. With Lindsay Allen,
I mean, she's the veteran leadership on Notre Dame alone is just it's incredible. Mm-hmm. But especially for Lindsay Allen, her first look is to facilitate.
Yes.
Her first look,
pass first point guard.
Yeah.
And the fundamentals, even on the passes, she doesn't do tricky passes. Mm-hmm. She doesn't do sketchy passes. She doesn't go for the flashy showboats. Mm-hmm. The way she pans the floor when she moves is effortless. So in order for Stanford to even try and give Notre Dame a run for the money, they're going to have to really get in their face. They're going to have to shut that vision down. Mm-hmm. But if they allow Lindsay Allen to go at it, they're going to take an L.
Mm-hmm. True or false, the point guard position is the most important position in basketball.
True.
Why?
Because being at the point guard spot, you're like the quarterback of the football team. Mm-hmm. Your teammates are looking at you. You're the one that you have to lead by example. You have to be the hardest worker on the team. You have to be everything. So because you're like the spokesperson for the coach. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And being the point guard, that's the most important role on the team.
You also have to know everyone else's mm-hmm. position mm-hmm. as a point guard, and a lot of times you know, it's not, sometimes post players, they only have to know one position. Guards sometimes at the wing only one, but a point guard needs to know where each mm-hmm. and every player is. Also, it's the mental aspect of it. Just they're the floor general, they're the leaders in every other way, not just physically but mentally. Mm-hmm. Bringing the team together when it needs to be brought together, speaking up and saying things, just the general out right. there. Yeah,
I agree. I feel that, you know, at any level, the point guard is the most, you know, they're the quarterback. Mm-hmm. You have the ball the most out of anybody. Yeah. You call the plays. You run the plays. While everyone's tired and running down court, they look back at you coming up with it. They look at you breaking the press. They look at you with the turnovers, with getting fouled, with getting hacked. And they also look to see if you get back off the ground. Mm-hmm. So if you start, you know, messing up on running plays, that changes the entire dynamic of the team. Like, even on the lower level circuits, like a team like Mount Sac, they just won another back-to-back state championship team. But every single year, out of 8 state championships, if they don't have the point guard position unlocked, they're never there. They can't contend. And you can always win a championship game without a center. Because you can outwork, you can outbox, and you can out-rebound other teams, but you cannot out-facilitate them.
One more thing to add, the point guard is the extension of the coach.
Yes.
So it's like, you know, the coach isn't on the court, the point guard is, but it's up to the point guard to have that connection with the coach to know, you know, sometimes you're not able to verbally communicate, I already know what the coach is feeling, I'm going to run this, we're going to do this, so an extension of the coach.
Just to piggyback on what all you guys say, I think it's also important for the point guard to know her players, not only their sweet spots and weigh them with the ball, but also to know them off the court as well.
Very true.
Like building a relationship with your teammates, you know, it shows on the court. If you obviously don't like each other off the court, you're not really going to pass it. There's something that's going to, you're going to see a little difference between the two. So I do feel the point, I'm glad we all agree that the point guard is the most important position.
I would like to hear the counter argument.
The best player, which is like the shooting guard or three guard, whoever is getting the ball more, like the scoring, the highest. I'm like, what?
Has to be.
Who's going to pass them the ball?
Yeah, who's going to get them in those positions?
It's just like, oh, I could just have a pass for his point guard, just pass me the ball, and I'm good. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But last question before we end our show for the night. It's crazy how time went by so quickly. Quickly. Men's basketball tournament, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there's so many upsets in the bracket. My bracket was done last year, the first round. Crazy, right?
Yeah.
Why is the men's basketball tournament so unpredictable, but yet women's basketball seems to be very traditional? You have your same top 4 teams that get to the top 4, and the winner has been UConn for a minute. But why is what's the difference? Like, what's going on with that?
You have to understand that men's college basketball, a lot of those guys are one and done. They don't have time to build up the chemistry, build up a program like a women's program. We can't go nowhere. Mm-hmm. So we're staying all 4 years.
That's true.
So we have time to build something up. Men, they're unpredictable because they don't know each other. They get like half of a year, if that, to prepare with one another, and then play your season, and then you're in your tournament. And by the end of the year, everybody's tired. You need one game to win. Mm-hmm. That's it. And so I think that has a lot to do with the unpredictability of it.
How do you guys feel?
I don't know, like what Noelle said, just men's basketball, like they're all like pretty much majority one and done. So it's like not like they can really build a team structure and like team, I don't know what the word is. Mm-hmm. But just with women, I mean, I don't know how to explain it. It's just so hard. Like, we know what to expect. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
I mean, I feel like it ties down to 3 things. Age, opportunity, and emotion.
Okay.
I mean, you have Mason III, who I believe just got MVP of his conference.
Kansas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, he was a 22-year-old freshman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you got guys that are coming in, preparing, staying back later to just do the one and done. So with that being said, like they touched on, they come in, they're only here for a year to try and get to the next level. Yeah. So you have a big age gap. So that chemistry is going to be off and on. You're always going to have a constant fluctuation of players every single year. That's insane. To see high profile teams still be in it to win it the way that they are, like high ranked teams like Duke or Kansas or Kentucky. That's crazy. Every single year, you're just, boom, you're in it and you're up there. And I think the last thing is, you know, women always play with emotion year round.
Mm-hmm.
Men always are more on the logical aspect, you know, buckle down. But women are used to that. So that's why you don't see as many upsets. You see upsets in efforts with, you know, demeanor with women's basketball. But the men, you don't see that flair, that uncontrollable emotion until you're going home.
Yeah.
Until it's do or die and you have to win this. It's take it all or nothing. So I think that women are more steady on that aspect. Yeah, they're more coachable. They're more balanced because we've always had that emotion. I mean, you can have a messed up day and you can play with way more emotion and score like 30 points as a woman. And with men, it doesn't really, you know, work out that way. Either you're always scoring that much or you're not.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's a variation for
That's true. I agree. I do feel, I know his point is the one and done, you know, them going to the league and just building a team chemistry. I mean,
yeah.
Gino, Pat, Muffet, Kim, they didn't build, it took them a while to build their program.
That's
and, true. And, yeah. they, and the thing about these coaches, the great coaches of women's basketball, they stick to their plan. Mm, and yeah. they, if you have a player that doesn't go with it, you're gone.
You're gone. Yeah.
As opposed to, oh, I have the top recruit in the world, mm-hmm. and they want to come in and they're going to start playing differently. Oh, no, you're going to go to a different school. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's kind of different on the men's side.
It is.
A great player, he gets recruited, they're the top player that they're playing more. Certain mm-hmm. coaches, I don't think that they will play them, but I think for the coaches in women's basketball, you have your top coaches, they stick to their program, they know what works, mm-hmm. and it works.
Yeah. Really. That's true. Yeah. It's very, very true.
So so thank you guys for breaking down the women's hoops bracket. I appreciate you guys for joining in. Guys, we're not going to go for predictions yet. We're going to wait till the Final Four and come back. Guys, thank you for tuning in tonight. I mean, send us your predictions. Send us your thoughts about women's basketball and how everything's going to go this season or this March Madness. Games start, I believe, on Friday.
Yep.
So make sure 17? You tune in. Yes, yep. Make sure you tune in and follow with us. I'm your host, Raina Ale. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Raina_Ale. And then we have Nashi over here. Where can we find you on Instagram and Twitter?
Instagram, Twitter, Go Nashi.
And then we have Serafina Malupe.
Yes, hi. Instagram, you can find me, Fina, FINAA_3, and Twitter, FINA_MAULUPE3.
And guys, before I go on to Noel, make sure you guys tune in and watch Fina play next season.
All
she
right.
has one more season.
Yeah.
We got to tune in and watch her next year. We're going to talk about you.
Make me pick a local team.
Okay, I got you.
And last but not least, Noe, where can you find you on Instagram or social media?
Only Twitter. I am SoLA45.
And make sure you guys follow all things AfterBuzz TV at AfterBuzz TV on Instagram and Twitter. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channels. And, again, share this discussion, comment. We like to debate. And find us on your social media handles and, you know, talk to us basketball. We like talking about basketball, right?
Yes.
See you guys next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.